Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 124. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in for my co-host, David Todd, as he's been doing most of the offseason, nearly all of the offseason, is Alex Cazora. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday and a happy birthday to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were founded on this date back in 1933 for a whole $2,500 and good return on investment.
I'd pay double that right now.
I might go triple. I might.
I don't know. I might even quadruple. I'll top your offer. I'll four times that amount.
Too rich for my blood.
Jack Lambert's birthday today as well. And, boy, I can remember as a kid, I wanted my front teeth to fall out so bad so I could look like Jack Lambert. Goodness, girl, what is he, 60? What would I put, 69 today?
I don't remember the age on that, but.
Let's see, what is he today? 64 today, 64. Let's see, Alex, I don't know which way that we'll start this morning. I guess we'll kind of wrap up with all the Le'Veon Bell stuff this morning. I've written about it quite a bit. I've kind of prodded the readers that I intend on running this into the ground because of the time of year that it is. Since I wrote, you know, a lot of things that I have written and we've talked about it on the podcast, Pat Kerwin, and you know, I don't know what a lot of people think about Pat Kerwin, but I absolutely love Pat Kerwin's work. I've been a big fan of Pat Kerwin for many, many years. He obviously runs Real Football Network, a great website. He's long been a show host on Sirius XM NFL Radio, which, by the way, a serious subscription is worth that channel alone, if you ask me. Kerwin, in so many words, he put a video out this week, basically kind of saying a lot of things that I have said for several weeks now, is that, Le'Veon Bell is kind of, you know, foolish to ask for this $15 million, if indeed that was what he asked for in his latest rap song. Kerwin explains, probably does a better job of what way I did, talking about the franchise tag and how if you were to back up three straight years of this franchise tag on top of the $960,000 salary that Le'Veon Bell is scheduled to make this year, you can see how, you know, where you kind of get a starting point at of the max of really what Le'Veon Bell could possibly make. And Kerwin breaks that down into, you know, $52 million over 4 years or a $13 million average. Now, that's not new money, obviously, because there's still the million that he's scheduled to make this year that's already on the books. But even then, you're talking about $51 million over the course of three additional years. And that would be his kind of his new money average. But, you know, in short, Kerwin goes on to say that, look, you know, Le'Veon should expect a deal between $9 and $10 million a year. I actually think it might be a little bit higher than that, $10 to $11 million a year in new money average. But that's fair. That would put Le'Veon at the second highest paid running back in the league. Obviously, put him behind Adrian Peterson. Kerwin went on to explain. Now, he kind of cherry picked on the stats here. He gave the total amount of receptions when comparing Le'Veon Bell to Adrian Peterson's career at this point, same amount of games played. I thought that was kind of unfair. He did recognize that Le'Veon had, you know, what, 100 something more receptions at this point of the year, but it wouldn't have done his viewpoint a disservice to go ahead and put up the receiving yardage as well too. Nobody, and here's the thing, Alex, nobody is arguing here that Le'Veon Bell is not a great back. And I think he's kind of taken exception to things I've written and several that other people have written over the course of these last 2 weeks here. Nobody's dissing him here. He's a great, great running back. I hope the Steelers are able to get him locked up. I hope he plays his entire career in Pittsburgh. But there's the whole economic side of this thing, and that's obviously one of the things that I love writing and talking about as well too. And I think most of us are on the money here to say that $15 million in new money average is just something Le'Veon Bell shouldn't expect.
Right, yeah, we're basically saying, the same thing on a different day. Again, going back to the rap lyric, I mean, Le'Veon Bell thinks he's the best back in the league, and there's an argument to be made for that, and of course, most players believe that they're the best in the league. So it's not a surprise that Bell would want $15 million because he feels he's the best back in the league, and that's best back money. But we know that the reality is going to be a little bit different in terms of what you can expect and what you can get. I agree with you. We've said it for a while now. I think Bell's going to get somewhere around $10.5 million per year. Of course, that could be structured in a million different ways, and that's kind of really what matters, the guaranteed money, the signing bonus. I'm not really sure what he's going to get there. But it'll be second place behind Peterson. The only thing, though, just to kind of bounce off of what you said about Pat Kerwin's, statement was Adrian Peterson is not a three-down back. I mean, he comes off the field a lot in passing situations. It's Jerick McKinnon that got a lot of play last year. I'm looking at the numbers right now, and AP played about two-thirds of the time last year. Bell is an every-down back. I mean, this is a guy that 2 years ago played, after LeGarrette Blount went away, he played, Bell played like 95% of the snaps. There are very, very few backs in the league that can do that and play at a high level. So there's an intrinsic value to that we have to make sure we don't overlook either, because he's a guy that can do literally everything in your offense. You don't have to worry about it, and there's something special about that. But that being said, again, I believe he's going to get, like you said, between 10 and 11 million per year.
I think Adrian Peterson could be. I mean, I think he's done enough in the past to show that he can catch the ball out of the backfield. It's just not something that's his specialty, and I just think kind of Minnesota chooses not to kind of wear him down either.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he can catch a little, but he's nowhere near on the plane of the threat that Bell is, and he's nowhere near the blocker that Bell is. They're in two totally different universes. If you ask me.
Sure.
And that's not why you pay a running back, because he can catch and pass protect. But there's a value to that, and ability to give you all those snaps that I think Kerwin, like you kind of hinted at, maybe really didn't talk about as well as he could have.
Sure. And he didn't discuss the blocking at all, mm-hmm. which, I mean, Le'Veon Bell, great back there. Now here's the thing, too. In the world of the NFL and running backs, and I agree that for the most part running backs are fungible up until you get to a point to where you get one like a Le'Veon Bell who can do all that. But with that said, how many years can a running back go and do it all?
Right. Not as basically the shortest of any position. Their shelf life. They depreciate like bananas. It's not good.
Yeah, once you cut them open, they start browning right away. Now, obviously, are there going to be running backs, and have there been running backs that have bucked the trend and played the 7, 8, 9, 10 years? Obviously, yes. But in today's NFL, it's just so very unlikely to see a guy have a Jerome Bettis kind of career. Jerome Bettis was also built a lot different than a guy like Le'Veon Bell is as well, too. With that said, kind of going back to, look, I think both sides need to get this thing done. A, Le'Veon Bell, I mean, he plays a position that, one more knee injury, and that could be it for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you could say that about any NFL player, but with a running back position, having to carry the football that many times, cutting ability, boy, the knee sure is important there. And I guess what I'm getting at here is he would be taking quite a risk not going into this season with a long-term deal. And with that said, the Steelers would probably like to get him locked up at a at a average, you know, we're talking about 10 and a half million. Granted, you could use a scenario with several other positions and several other players, but in my opinion, you know, unless the Steelers are really trying to railroad Le'Veon Bell at a new money deal at $8.5 million and just not wanting to pay him, you know, the guaranteed money, he really should think about getting this long-term deal. I just think it's beneficial for both sides here. And on top of it here, you know, the team, you know, usually what do we see every offseason? Usually two, maybe three deals, long, you know, lucrative deals at best during an offseason. When you look at next offseason, what the Steelers have on their plate, with guys like Antonio Brown and Stephon Tuitt, you would think that this is the year to get a guy like David DeCastro and Le'Veon Bell done.
Yeah, I mean, I think DeCastro was a lock to get done. When did Cam Hayward get his deal done? Do you remember the time of the year? It was somewhere.
It's a week from now.
Okay, so maybe that could be an idea for when DeCastro is going to get done, because I can't imagine that conversation is going to be too, you know, hardball, even with the Osemele deal kind of, you know, inflating the value of guards a little bit. I think DeCastro's a lock to get done, and so I think, yeah, he's going to get done. Absolutely. Of course, each side has every reason to get a deal done with Le'Veon Bell right now. Bell, you know, the sooner the Bell gets a contract, the better for his health, and, you know, anything that, you know, because something happens this year, it could totally, you know, change his value. And the sooner that clock starts for a next contract, because maybe he can squeeze out one last deal. Hypothetically, you know, once this future contract extension ends. So, again, he wants to get healthy, and you know, we don't know exactly when that's going to be, and I think that puts a little bit of a stress on the, you know, the time that you have to get a deal done from you know, the start of the regular season. Yeah, hopefully it gets done, and I think it will. I just don't know when.
You know, realistically, though, this might be his only time to strike. You know,
it's his best time, yeah. And like, I mean, you just have the best chance to get another contract of some sort if you can get a deal done now and get that clock started for a future one.
And on top of that, now look, I don't know exactly how the Steelers are going to use Le'Veon Bell in 2016, but I would not be surprised to see D'Angelo Williams, you know, eat into his snaps, especially early on in the season. So, you know, statistically speaking, you know, even though Bell has a potential of probably catching, let's say, 50 balls, and I mean, look, even with some decreased playing time, he should easily hit the 1,500 total yardage mark. And I mean, 2,000 is 2,000 out of the question. You know, even with a little bit of, 2,000 total yards from scrimmage, even if he was to give up, let's say, a quarter of his snaps to D'Angelo Williams?
No, I don't think anything's out of – I mean, a quarter of the snaps, I mean, that might be
that's high. That's
high. Yeah. No, I think Williams is definitely going to play more. I mean, there's trust in him. You know, you finally have someone – to spell Le'Veon Bell. Like you said, 2014, you didn't have that at all. That's why Bell played so much. 2,000 total yards from scrimmage is 125 per game, which I think is very attainable for Le'Veon Bell. So, sure, I think it's all in play.
I don't know. There's no reason for us to kind of beat this horse anymore as far as this contract goes. I just think it's a prime time for Bell to get it done. I think it's a prime time for the Steelers to get it done.
You know, the name that keeps coming to mind when we keep talking about Bell's career arc and contract situation and things like that. You know, the name that keeps coming to mind for me. It's Matt Forte, and Bell is better than what Matt Forte was even at his peak, but I think they're kind of similar guys, and for whatever it's worth, I'm just looking at Forte's past contract history. He signed a 4-year, $30 million deal on July 16th, now in 2012, and now Bell's going to get more money than that, but July 16th I thought was an interesting date, so let's get a deal done July 16th like Matt Forte, Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I doubt it's going to get there. That would be the day that I'd put on David DeCastro earliest, you know. And in fact, looking at my thing here, July 16th last year was when Cameron Hayward signed his new. So I was eight. I said a week. I was close. It was 8 days from right now. The thing is, too, the Steelers reported to training camp a little bit earlier last year. as well. So, and for some reason, they like to announce these deals on like a Thursday or a Friday as well. So, when you consider that today's the 8th, today's a Friday, the 15th, I don't know if we'll see it on the 15th, but go ahead and kind of mark your calendars to pay attention to Twitter maybe on the 21st or the 22nd. Mm-hmm. That would be my best guess at a DeCastro deal getting done if one was going to get done before the start of training camp. Because, there are benefits to maybe negotiating some during training camp, but, by now – these two sides have to have, talking about the DeCastro side and the Steelers side. I mean, what's left that needs discussion at this point? Mm-hmm. So maybe circle 21st or the 22nd on your calendar for a DeCastro deal getting done. Then that would leave the rest of training camp to get a deal done with Le'Veon Bell. I wasn't going to go this way, but being as how we kind of already talked about it, I kind of told Alex that I wanted to talk about the tackle position this year or this week when we've been going through all these positions and kind of doing a pre-training camp breakdown. We already talked about running backs some, so let's continue talking about running backs, Alex. We've already talked quite a bit about Le'Veon Bell and what he brings to the table. Were you surprised whatsoever with what D'Angelo Williams brought this team last year?
I think we all agreed it was a really solid pickup when it happened, but I don't think anyone really knew what Williams was going to bring or he was going to bring it to this level. To come in once Bell went down and be the guy, I think if most people would have told you before the season that, could D'Angelo Williams ever be the guy, most people probably would have said no or paused or, felt a little bit of nervousness. So, I think I was a little surprised. I think he showed a better burst than what he's had, and he was healthy now in Pittsburgh. He had some injuries in Carolina towards the end, which really dogged him. The guy did it all. I mean, he was, a slightly poorer version of Le'Veon Bell. I mean, the guy's got great vision. He doesn't dance. He gets down, upfield pretty quickly. He's a great pass protector. He earned some trust in Ben Roethlisberger, was an asset out of the backfield. Really, not a lot of holes in his game.
I wrote quite a bit. I mean, as soon as I knew that D'Angelo was going to be a post-June 1st cut mm-hmm. by the Panthers, many, many months ago, I immediately wrote that I thought he would be a good pickup for the Steelers if the price is right. I remember watching him quite a bit at Carolina. I remember kind of watching film at Memphis when he was there. I've always been a D'Angelo Williams fan. I did not know, however, I mean, I knew he was a good pass protector. I just didn't think I knew how good a pass protector he was.
Same here. Remember that hit on Alden Smith he had? That's the one I think of when I think of pass protection.
And that wasn't his only one that makes you back that tape up either.
Not at all. Yeah.
Throughout the season there. So I think he did have a little better vision maybe than what I thought, and granted, I thought he had good vision when he signed with the Steelers. I thought he was turned out to be an even better pass protector than what I thought he was. Ultra smart. I mean, you're never gonna confuse this guy with a dumb running back, a guy that can cut behind the line of scrimmage. And I think that's such a key thing when you're looking at running backs and when you're judging running backs coming out of college is how does a running back able to make people miss in the backfield?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest thing. Sure, running backs can read holes all day long. If you're opening up a hole big enough for trucks to drive through, you're going to have some big holes for these guys. But when you go and you look and you break down a guy like the kid coming out of Alabama this year.
Out of Alabama? You mean like
– Yeah. Who's the kid?
Coming out this past year, Derrick Henry?
Yeah, Derrick okay. Henry. When you go back and you kind of look at his tape versus Zeke Elliott's tape from Ohio State, Elliott much better making people miss in the backfield than a guy like Henry was.
Mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that's really the kind of things that set running backs apart, in my opinion. I think the Steelers have two of those in Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams. You know, they can turn the negative play into at least no yardage or positive yardage, and I think that's huge. I think the pass protection thing is huge. I think the ability of both these backs had to catch football out of the backfield is huge. All right, we already kind of discussed some snap counts a little bit. In my opinion, they have to save as much wear and tear on Le'Veon Bell as possible without giving up the possibility of gaining 15 yards on a play when he's in the game. Is 10 snaps a game for D'Angelo Williams too much, too few?
No, that feels just about right. I think it's going to vary a little bit on the game plan. Remember the Kansas City game last year where Williams kind of became the de facto short yardage back that had mixed success. But you kind of think of it in that way, that they might try to, you know, game plan a couple things in. Maybe 1 week they get him some more reps on third down. Maybe another week they do some short yardage situation. Maybe 1 week they do some things where Williams starts the game just to kind of mix it up a little bit, give a different look, throw a defense kind of off script, maybe something like that. So I think it could vary a little bit, but you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's a fine line because, you know, Le'Veon Bell is one of your best players, and it's really tough to justify taking him off the field, even for someone who's proven himself like D'Angelo Williams. So it'll be a little bit of a challenge and a little bit of an art for Todd Haley and company.
I mean, you go back and look at some of those. The thing is, too, is he's going to start the season. He's probably going to be tentative, talking about Le'Veon Bell, at least a little tentative with that knee to start with here. You go back and look at some of these cuts that he's made over. I mean, there's the old joke in old Bill Cosby album, you know, stop on a dime and give you 9 cents change. That guy can do that. The thing is, I think you have to be ultra careful with Le'Veon Bell at the start of the season. So with that, I would kind of maybe expect, I don't know, D'Angelo maybe to get around 10 to 15 snaps a game. I just worry about in today's NFL, I think you need to keep a running back at around, I don't know, touches around 250 or less,
mm-hmm,
in a season, and more towards the 200 side if you can help it, if you want to prolong his career. You know, obviously I don't think you want to get him up there around the 250, 280 touches. I just think that's too many total touches for a running back in today's NFL.
Well, I mean, if they're catches, then it's less of an issue. I mean, because Bell has potential to still catch 80 passes this year, and I said I think he could even hit 100 if everything kind of goes perfectly. And so there's less wear and tear if you're catching. It's really more about the carries. I mean, what did Bell have last year in terms of, in terms of touches last year, he had, I think, about 250, right? And just the six games he played last year. I'm trying to do the quick math here. 113 carries, 100, or no, I'm looking at yards, not catches. My bad. What did he
hit? He only had 133 carries last year,
and wrong stat.
And he had 24 receptions. So he was just shy of 100. You know, right around what, 137? Is that what total touches are here? 137 total touches. Now the year before that, 2014. He had 290 attempts, and you kind of hit on this when we talked earlier. Once LeGarrette Blount was gone, it was Le'Veon Bell. Right. I mean, all the time. I mean, 80. I don't think, you know, I could be wrong, but I mean, I just don't think you want to go through another season of giving him 290 carries and 83 total receptions. I'm okay with the receptions, but I think that 83 receptions will end up going down as Le'Veon Bell's career high, probably. But, I mean, you can still get a lot out of a running back with 60, 70, catches during a regular season. I'm just not convinced you want to give him the football 200, hand the football off to him 290 times.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. I mean, carries is one thing, touches is another, because, I mean, even Bell, in theory, was on pace for 365 touches last year if you take what he did in six games and you spread it out over 16. And in 2014, he was about at that same number. So it's not the touches that you worry about. It is some of the carries, because the carries is what kind of wears you down more. It's a difficult thing to walk. It's a different, you know, there's a fine line there. I mean, I think Williams is definitely going to get an increase in play time. He's not going to be just the understudy for whenever, you know, Bell needs a breather. There's going to be a role for him, as there should be. But, you know, again, it's really tough because you can't live in your fears with Bell, because he's a great back and you want to, you know, maximize his value whenever he's at the peak of his career. But you also want to try to make an effort to not run him into the ground, as we've seen some other running backs in the past do. So, you know, I still think that he's going to get 350 or so touches this year, maybe 325 as the floor, just because he's Le'Veon Bell. And if they give him a new contract this year, you're darn right they're going to play him and get their money's worth out of him.
All right, give me an over-under for total touches. Give me a something where fans would argue about how many total touches Le'Veon Bell will get in 2016.
How many did he have in 2014? 290 and 83. That was 373 in 2014.
Right.
Let's call it
350. Is that an arguing point?
We'll say even a little lower, 340 total touches.
All right, 340. I'm going to take the under right now.
Okay.
And that of course assumes he, you know, he plays in all 16 games. I'll take the under at 340. You going to take the over?
Oh man, I'm fighting with myself now, and I came up with a number. I do think his carries comes down some. I think the receptions honestly might have a chance to go up, or maybe hit at that 83 again when you think about the loss of Heath Miller and, you know, who was Bell or Ben's, you know, safety valve and check down and security blanket. So
let me hedge you. Let me give you a little buffer on your own number there. What if I is 325 total touches, a number where we would have you know, half to take on under and half to take on over, or 330.
I'm thinking he's gonna fall, and it's hard to put a number, of course, but I'm thinking he's gonna fall somewhere in that 330 to like 339 range. So I guess if using that 340 number, I would take the under, but just barely, because I think he's gonna get about 50 less touches than what he did 2014.
So if we're using 340, I'll still take the under.
Okay. Yeah, I will too, but. But barely so. Then that 330 range, I think, sounds right.
You know, should we see with D'Angelo more of a Mualdi Moore situation here?
If
you do the math, 10 times 16 regular season games is 160 total snaps for D'Angelo. Something makes me want to say that's too few snaps for D'Angelo.
Well, if you think about it in just 10 per game, I mean, there's going to be ebb and flow. There's going to be games where Bell is just tearing it up, and you're not taking Bell off the field because he's just having so much success. And there's going to be times where maybe Bell's struggling a little bit because of the defense or whatever the case is, and you want to mix things up. And I think there's going to be times where it's going to be game plan for Williams. So I think you might see his snaps kind of, you know, be a little roller coaster-y, if that's a that's not a word. I don't know.
What's the arguing point over under for D'Angelo Williams' snap count?
Here's what I have. This is what happens whenever we go things on the fly here. Because how many total snaps are there going to be for the running backs this year? Basically, how many offensive snaps are the Steelers going to have this year?
Let's go 1,100.
So if we want Bell at, how many snaps do we want Bell at? I mean, he was at like 95% 2 years ago. We don't want that. We want him at 80%. We want him at 85%. I mean, what is if you? It's hard to say, but what is an ideal percentage of that 1,100 that we're looking at?
Well, what is? Let's see. If we took 1,100 and we times it by 75%, that's 825 snaps.
Yeah, I think Bell's going to play more than 75%. So let's put him at, like, if we put him at 80%, that's 880 snaps for Bell, which means that D'Angelo would have roughly 220 to pick up.
220. Okay, here's a number for you. Last year, the Steelers' offense had, now this was non-penalty snaps, obviously, I think, 1,073 offensive snaps last year. So 1,100 is a fair number.
Yeah.
To use maybe total snaps. So if you gave D'Angelo 15% of 1,100, dead air, 165 total snaps. That still feels low to me.
I don't know. I think he'll be right around 200, because if we assume 1,100, and I think Bell's going to get about 80%. That's 880. There's going to be some empty set, and there might be some times where they're closing out of the game and they're putting in, like, Toussaint and a blowout or something like that. So
We hope,
yeah. And it'll probably happen at least once. So I think 200's a – if I gave you the over-under of 200 on D'Angelo, would you take the over or the under?
I think that's a good arguing point. I think that's the number – right there. Maybe 225 at highest.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe this is just me from an investment standpoint with Bell, and I'd be more apt to try to get D'Angelo on the field more rather than less. So I would tend to go over that 200, but just barely. I would want the over on that. In fact, 200 divided by 16 games is 12.5 snaps a game.
Yeah, so, I mean, you had suggested 10. I think he probably gets about 12 per game. I mean, if you're just trying to throw numbers out there to pass the time, I think he probably gets – because, again, you want to – because he's a useful piece of this offense. You want to use him. You could use some pony sets or, you know, some stuff where Bell split out and D-Will's in the backfield. But it's really tough to justify taking Bell off the field, especially if you give him a new contract.
You would take the under 200? For D'Angelo?
Yeah, that was 12.5 per game, right? So
right.
I'm going to go with 12, which would be 192 total snaps. So the under, I guess.
What's the reality? What's the reality that both players dress and play for all 16 games?
Oh, probably not great. There's always going to be some little bump and bruise. You know, D'Angelo's not getting any younger. We know Bell has a little bit of a history. I mean,
that's ideal scenario, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm not
predicting catastrophic injury, but there could be something where someone's banged up one game and someone has to bow out.
Right. Is this the best tandem backfield in the NFL?
Oh, hitting me with a tough question. I'd have to think about the rest and all the different committees that are out there, but obviously Bell is, to me, a top two back in the league, and D'Angelo is one of the best, I guess, quote-unquote, backups in the league. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, there's a great argument to be made. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't tell you you're wrong.
All right, we talked about the top two. If we see a third one this year, we hope that it's in a blowout situation. Right now, it looks like that player is going to be Fitzgerald Toussaint. And although we didn't see a lot of them last year, and, of course, everybody's going to point to that fumble in the Denver game, I like what I saw. I'm interested to see him have a full camp with the Steelers this year,
mm-hmm.
and to see, because you want to talk about one guy that's going to get a lot of work mm-hmm. during the preseason, it's going to be Fitzgerald Toussaint. And I like what he, you know, we talk all the time and have for years about what running backs do when the football's not in their hands. I like what he did last year when the football wasn't in his hands from a blocking standpoint. I think this guy really has a chance to I think he could quite possibly lead the preseason in rushing and have that dubious honor, which means absolutely nothing. And I think if he plays his cards right, he could wind up being The Steelers' number two running back in 2017. What have you liked, disliked about Fitzgerald Toussaint so far?
Well, I think he's a tough runner. You know, I think he's got a decent frame. He's kind of a compact kind of guy, low to the ground. Remember that Cincinnati game, which you referenced, several times in the playoffs. He ran well, and the numbers might not show it exactly, but if you watch, us watching the game, we know that, without Toussaint, they probably don't win that game. So I think, he tries to hold his own in pass protection. He's not a particularly speedy or explosive guy. So there's a limit to what he can do. But as a number three, I mean, this is a guy that, the team liked a lot. He was on the practice squad. And remember, they had that one – they had the bye week, and it was him and I think it was Isaiah Pede kind of competing with each other, and Toussaint won out. And so they brought Toussaint up, and he ends up getting a hat. He ends up playing. And, you saw a lot of progression in a short amount of time. And certainly he's doing things in practice that lead to that. So – I think the running back depth top to bottom is pretty encouraging.
Is his roster spot in doubt any right now?
Sure, I think there's some doubt. He's certainly not a lock. I mean, you have other guys that can compete, and Toussaint still has to earn that spot. He could have a terrible preseason and fumble the football and not make any explosive plays, and he could be on his way out. I mean, we saw how fluid this spot's been. They've kind of rotated in, different running backs, last year. And there's some competition there, which we'll get to, a Daryl Richardson, a Cameron Stingley, guys like that. So it's not a lock, but, I think it's very, very fair to say he's going to be the favorite.
And I think he would really have to fall flat on his face and have to put that football on the ground. We didn't see a lot out of special teams too, so that's something that really want to kind of look at during the preseason.
He did run down some kicks last year, though. He does have that record.
And that's we don't expect him on punt coverage team, right?
No, I don't know where he would even play. No, he wouldn't play there.
So if anything, if a running back, most running backs, I should say, when it comes to special teams, most of them are not going to be four phase, core guys. Most of them are going to be one or two phase, and we would expect maybe to see him at kickoff, on kickoff coverage more than anything else.
I think he's going to be, that spot has the ability to be on kick coverage, on punt return. I believe he's been out there, or at least our running back has been out there. And then maybe on kick return as the up back, if they choose to go that route and put a running back there, you could have him in play. So those are kind of probably the three areas that you could see a third running back mix in on special teams.
Some other guys, some also-rans that will be fun to maybe watch during the training camp and preseason. Brandon Brown Dukes out of Mercyhurst, 5'8", 200. I gotta be honest, I haven't watched much of, and can't find much of anything on him, to be quite honest with you. Brandon Johnson, who was just signed recently, know a little bit about him out of Penn State. Kind of a bigger back, tall. You like those guys that can see over the offensive line. Daryl Richardson, who's already been around and had some cup of coffee in the NFL, would probably be the odds-on favorite to, if anybody was going to challenge Fitzgerald Toussaint, it would probably be him. And then you have Cameron Stingley, more of a bigger kind of bruiser back that we know a little bit already because of his time on the roster last year during training camp, and I think he got hurt in that Minnesota Vikings game, started preseason there. This is one of those position groups, however, where don't get too attached to these Brandon Brown Dukes, Brandon Johnsons, Stingleys, because a quick hamstring injury or an ankle twist early on in training camp, these guys will be out the door.
Right. Remember Ross Schuerman from last year?
Right. I really wanted him to play at least a couple of look, I just think – what was my prediction on him? He would have the longest play from scrimmage during – or longest run from scrimmage during the preseason last year, and he never even made it to the preseason.
Yeah, he pulled up lame at the end of one run. He sat on the cooler. Ross Ventrone kind of talked to him, and then you never saw him again. And he didn't tear his Achilles because he was working out for the Bucks, later on in the season. season. But it was just one of those things where, you know, if you're going to be out for a couple weeks, you know, we can't do anything with you. But I'm going to put on my homer glasses here for a second, Dave, because I think there's some intrigue at running back. I'm excited about a lot of these guys. Brandon Johnson, because of the measurables, we saw his Penn State workout. I think that's exciting. You know, 239 pounds, a guy that can move and has a vertical. Brandon Brown Duke, he's a guy I've actually watched before, because I went to Clarion, and Mercyhurst and Clarion are in the same conference, and I've seen him. I've called football games while watching him. He was a big threat. You know, his stats came down from where he was freshman year to senior year, but he's an explosive guy. He's got, you know, good long speed, and I saw some clips from minicamp. He's got some vision too. He can, you know, in those inside zone plays where you're reading the hat, he can kind of dart in and out. He's a 5'8 guy, so I think he's probably even shorter than that. So he's kind of easy to miss. So he's kind of an interesting guy who got his contract out of rookie minicamp. You know, Richardson, like you said, the Sunday experience, played with the Rams, and then Cameron Stingley, who I'm kind of almost excited about. And I dogged him last year, but he's dropped a lot of weight this year. He looks a whole lot better in shape because he knows. He's playing running back, and he's not going to play fullback. So, you know, maybe he makes some noise.
It's true or false, the Steelers will absolutely carry three true running backs on their 53-man roster.
Yes, absolutely, 100% true.
I agree with you. Now, one other guy in that backfield that he just doesn't get enough credit for what he did last year, and that's Roosevelt Nix, mm-hmm. man. I wrote about him. I don't know if you saw it. I wrote about him this mm-hmm. past week as well, too.
I did.
Man, what a difference maker he was when he was on the field, and you can't help but wonder how the Steelers' offense would have been able to perform. Now, granted, they were without Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams, but I'm talking about that playoff game, the division round playoff game against the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. How much different, and quite honestly, I mean, we can talk about the game against the Bengals as well, too. How much different would those games have gone for Todman and Toussaint? And the Steelers offense as a whole, had Roosevelt Nix been able to been in there and play 10, 12 snaps?
Well, the Denver game, I don't even think about offensive snaps. I think about special team snaps, because the one that still sticks with me is the long punt return by Jordan Norwood. I think it was a 30-yard return on the first punt, and it's Matt Spaeth out there trying to run it down, and you know, he doesn't even come close to Norwood, and he's able to get the edge. So if Nix is out there, I bet you Nix shuts that play down, and you know, who knows whatever happens from there. There's a whole butterfly effect. So you know, I think from that standpoint, special teams value. Because that unit was a mess by the end of last year. There were so many guys hurt and running in and out, new bodies out there. I mean, it was kind of crazy. So, you know, I think the special teams value that Nix gives you would have even trumped what he would have given you on offense, and he definitely would have given you something on offense.
And the thing is, we don't know. We didn't see enough to know how comfortable Todman and Toussaint would be running behind, you know, a lead blocker either. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it takes a special kind of patience at times to kind of let that stuff develop. But when you go back and look, did you see the amount of explosive plays that I did? You see that in
I
my
did,
post
yeah.
What was it? 14. I don't have it in front of me open. 14 explosive plays by running backs last year for the Steelers, and I think Nix was on the field for what, 8 or 9 of them.
Yeah, it sounds about right. I mean, it was a pretty clear correlation between that. And yeah, I mean, you know, just Nix gives you that extra element, because everyone thinks of Haley's offense and the Steelers as this explosive 11 personnel, spread the field out, throw it to Antonio Brown kind of offense. And it is in so many ways, but it's also has the ability to now go heavy set to open the game up in 21 personnel or 22 personnel. And to hit you in the mouth. And if you're an offense and if you're expecting and game planning for 11 personnel, and then they come out in 22 and they're starting to run, you know, these lead strong plays at you, it throws you off your game a little bit. And now you can't game plan and you can't exactly know what to expect for this offense. So I think it really gives you that extra element. And I think to kind of finish the last point that you made, Dave, when we didn't have that last year with Roosevelt Nix, I think it limited the offense a little bit more, made them a little bit more predictable, and it really hindered them.
When Nix was on the field last season, the Steelers averaged 5.08 yards per rush. If memory serves me, I looked at some stats recently. When it comes to true fullbacks, now I think Spencer Ware kind of got classified as a fullback, but that shouldn't really be. I think Nix was the league leader when it came to him being on the field as far as best average yards per rush as far as true fullbacks go. Five rushing touchdowns took place when Nix was on the field last season, and here's the number: 14 explosive running plays by running backs last year that gained 20 or more yards. Nix was on the field for 9 of them.
Wow.
And his presence wasn't just felt in the running game either. Now, he obviously wasn't on the field for a lot of passing plays last year, but when he was on the field, the Steelers' offense averaged 8 yards per passing play as opposed to 7.0 when he was off of it. Now, you give me 7.4 any day anyway, and I'm going to be happy. But 8 when he was on the field, already kind of tipping your hand that he's only going to be a guy that's going to be, not going to hurt you really out of the backfield as a pass catcher anyway. I'll take that all day long. And like I said, to kind of open up the discussion on him, I can't help but think he would have made some difference, because when you go back, and I broke this down too, in that game against the Broncos, Todman and Toussaint both combined to rush for 45 yards on 17 carries. 5 of those 17 carries, which is almost 33%, resulted in either 0 or negative yardage.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, because that Denver front was nasty with Derek Wolfe and Malik Jackson, and obviously DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller and Trevathan inside. That was a really, really difficult front to run on. So if you get Nix in there, they're going to at least get some positive yards. Yeah, big difference. I mean, there's no debate about it. Nix would have made a difference.
150 total snaps for Nix last year on offense, and that's just regular season, obviously. And how many games did he miss with the foot?
He got hurt in the Baltimore game, I believe, right? So I think he missed half of the Baltimore game and then the whole Cleveland game, 10 things.
You want to talk, let's play the over-under game again. More or less, is 150 a good number for Nix? I mean, should that be the arguing point as far as total snaps for him in 2016?
Well, if you gave me 150, Dave, I'd take the over. Because remember, he didn't play a lot the first quarter last year because he was still kind of cutting his teeth as a special teamer. It was Will Johnson that was getting the snaps. It's kind of that H-back kind of type. So, he missed basically the first month of the season because he just wasn't getting a role in offense. They've slowly worked him in as they kind of saw his worth. So I think he'll hit 200 again this year, which, like D'Angelo, is about 12 per game, which I think sounds like a good number.
All right, maybe 200. Is 180 a better argument point with
him? Yeah, I think that's, if you want to do an over-under to have a nice Vegas line, then yeah, I think 180 would be a better number than 150.
No way whatsoever. It would take injury for Roosevelt next month not to make this 53, right, as a fullback.
Yeah, I can't. It's so funny because a year ago you told me Roosevelt Nix is making the roster. I'm like, you're crazy.
I tell you, there's no way. In fact, yeah. I did say no.
Yeah, I'll eat crow for that one. But yeah, there's no way he's not making the roster. He's a lock to make it. Absolutely.
I mean, when you talk about futures players, I mean, the guys that are signed off season to futures players, and then not only that, he was switching positions,
mm-hmm.
So to speak. They're just, there's no way a guy like that makes the roster.
It shouldn't have worked. We have no idea. It's unexplainable how he got here,
Here's the thing, though. I mean, we saw him stick out on special teams last year. During the preseason, do you remember him sticking out as a fullback?
How much did he even play as a fullback? He got reps, obviously. I remember that in camp, but no, not a ton as a fullback. But it was the pump block against Carolina that kind of sealed it. Like, okay, this guy's going to make the roster, because we saw him make some good tackles on special teams in the preseason games. But that real impact splash play came in the finale. So I don't think he did as much at fullback, but special teams, he was, that's how he earned his name.
Do you consider David Johnson more of, we've had this talk before. Mm-hmm. I mean, is he, he's part fullback, he's part H-back, he's part, tight end, is there any chance whatsoever? You know, this will be part of our tight end discussion, you know, as well. But how much fullback? Here's a better question: is David Johnson more fullback than Will Johnson was?
Yes, I would consider. I think he's a much better lead blocker through the hole. I think he's a stronger guy, a more compact frame. Johnson was more athletic. Will Johnson was more athletic than David Johnson. David Johnson's a better lead blocker.
Would you agree, though, David Johnson was brought in, though, more as insurance for Knicks than he was the tight end position?
Yes, because this team, pre-David Johnson signing, only had Knicks as the only fullback on its roster. So David Johnson is a casserole of sorts where he can kind of do everything. He's kind of all lumped in. He can play inline tight end, off-the-ball tight end, kind of the H-back role, the fullback, you know, whatever. But the team only had one fullback, and we identified that. And so David Johnson was brought in to solve that one fullback problem.
I think we beat these running backs up pretty good, huh? We covered them pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it'll be a good group. Again, like you said, you'll see a lot of these guys, because obviously Bell, D'Angelo, they're not really going to get any playing time during the preseason. And maybe Knicks doesn't even get a ton either, because he's a lock. You know, why the heck do you need to play him? So you're going to see a lot of these smaller name guys out here. But get their shot, and I love seeing the smaller name guys get their opportunity. It's a lot of fun to watch.
I think Knicks should play more than anything to let Toussaint run behind him a little bit.
Just make him look good, yeah. Yeah, I mean, tiny bit just to kind of shake some of the rust off with that foot injury, but, I mean, really, there's not a big incentive to play him.
Fitzgerald Toussaint, more or less than 200 yards rushing during the preseason.
Oh, man.
A totally meaningless stat, but we got to have something to look forward to.
Sometimes
here.
You get behind those third-string O-lines, and they're just kind of running like chickens with their heads cut off, so it's hard to find any running lane. I'll take the under, I guess.
All right, I'll take the over just for sake of being on a different side of fence. In a Friday Morning Post on ESPN on the Insider Edition, Vincent Verhey of Football Outsiders listed the most underrated players for all 32 teams in the NFL. For the Steelers, he selected Stephon Tuitt. And if you pulled 10 Steelers fans and asked them to name the most underrated player on the Steelers, I wonder how many would have named Stephon Tuitt. Now, here's the blurb that he writes. Okay. Cameron Hayward gets the attention up front, but Tuitt really came on last season with 6.5 sacks, 5 hits, and 19.5 hurries, along with 40 run tackles, all in just 14 games. He's a player to watch this season. I'm not going to argue with any of that because the half of that was just stats. I can do that as well, too. Right. That's what bloggers are notorious for doing. Giving opinions and make half of it fact, you know. Look, there's no doubt that this guy could have a monster season. And the thing about Stephon Tuitt, as I wrote in this post this morning, he could have had an even better 2015 season because he essentially missed 2.5 games because it seemed like he came out of that Arizona Cardinals game in the first half there. In fact, early rather than later in the second half. And on top of it, when he did return from injury, from that knee injury, it seemed to take him about 2.5 games to get kind of back to the Stephon Tuitt that we were kind of used to seeing there. So, I mean, this was a guy that really could have had 8.5, maybe 9 sacks last year, maybe 50 run tackles. Is it right to list him as the most underrated Steelers player?
Well, when we talk about this subject, who is the most underrated, you have to look at it in two different scopes. One, who is the most underrated, you know, in terms of the national media? Because Steelers fans know how good Stephon Tuitt is. Every Steelers fan knows that. But national media, he's less of a name. So national media, I think it makes sense. But then there's the local media. Who do Steelers fans even undervalue? And obviously Tuitt wouldn't be that answer. So let me pose the question to you, Dave. Who is the most underrated nationally, and who's the most underrated locally? Because I think there's just two separate things. I think it's fair to say, I mean, you could have different answers, but I think it's fair to say Tuitt is underrated nationally because Hayward gets the attention, and Tuitt hasn't gotten that attention yet.
Maybe. I think co-winner would be Marcus Gilbert.
Yeah, that's a great choice too. Yep, it's hard to argue that one.
I can understand. Look, I'm not taking issue with Vincent's naming of Tuitt. I just am not sure how many Steeler fans that would be the guy off the top of their head now.
Well, because they're thinking locally, because everyone knows how good Tuitt is. Most fans even know how good Marcus Gilbert is. But nationally, I think, you know, if you tell about a Rams fan about Stephon Tuitt, I'd be like, okay, who the heck is that?
I think Steeler fans would be more apt to tell you Marcus Gilbert underrated than Stephon Tuitt. But where does Lawrence Timmons fit in all of this?
Yeah, well, so there's a lot of discussion about him.
We both expect some more dime. We expect Timmons, the wear and tear factor, for him to kind of be off the field maybe a little bit more than he was last year. But it just cracks me up to see some of these fans just, he's not a three-down linebacker. He's not this. He's not. It just maybe we'll see that this year where Timmons is such a liability on third downs when he's left out there.
Well,
but there's been nothing to this point for us to say definitively that Timmons is a liability on third down.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get too down into this rabbit hole. I tweeted out a bunch of thoughts on it yesterday. Maybe we'll save that for Monday because we'll talk about that and kind of the Ross Cockrell news maybe Monday as well because we don't have a lot of time left. But I don't think anyone's calling Timmons underrated, though. Is that what you're – just circle back to that. Is that what you're trying to say?
Maybe underappreciated.
I think generally, yeah. I mean, in terms of what his career's been, but I think, you know, who he is today, I think he's getting a lot of flack that isn't necessary, you know, locally, but I don't think nationally he's the guy. If you had to choose nationally, Tuitt or Gilbert as the underrated player from a national perspective, is it Gilbert your choice?
Probably. Okay. Yeah.
I'll go Tuitt just to be a little.
All right, who's locally?
For me, and I've said this before, it's Robert Golden, because everyone wants to run him out, and they don't think he can be a starter, and they want to get Sean Davis in there. I think Golden could start 16 games and be just fine. I think there's so many people that try to pick holes in his game. There's no holes in his game. I mean, people try to do it, and they just kind of make stuff up, and they say things that, you know, really don't make a lot of sense. So I think Golden is probably by far the most underrated guy locally.
Yeah, I still would go. I think I'd go Gilbert there. But
I think fans have warmed up to how good Marcus Gilbert is, though. I mean, you really see a lot of people knock and dog Marcus.
I just not appreciating what he did last year, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's just
he's a lineman, and linemen are status quo, always underappreciated.
And they really don't have stats.
Right, yeah. It's hard. There's no stat for Stockton Khalil Mack.
All right, we have, as usual, we always go into this thing saying 45 minutes, Alex, and we run into an hour. We have received quite a few donations, though, to the GoFundMe account for the training camp donations here. Look, people, if you don't want to donate, don't donate, okay? Don't bitch about it on Steelers Depot, too, just because you don't think we should ask for donations. Plain and simple. If you think this is a good cause, then donate. If you don't. It really is that simple. You want to run down some names?
I can pull up the names. I don't have the list on me.
Why don't we go over more of a full donation list? In Monday's podcast, and I have a feeling we're going to have a little bit of time to do that. Needless to say, we have received quite a few donations so far. We appreciate that. A lot of these are the same names from last year as well, too. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the badge, the donate badge in the lower right-hand sidebar of the site there. And we'll just kind of leave it at that. You got about three more weeks before camp gets underway. It's a worthy cause if you've read Alex's work in the past here. Let's see, Alex, that has it for this week. We'll be back at it again on Monday. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.